This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Tan Chen Li, and this is the morning run. Good morning. And it's just gone past 6 a.m. It's Friday, the 11th of March, and we made it to the weekend, Chen Li. Are you excited?
Very. I have a very jam-packed weekend, actually.
What are your big plans? Tell us.
I have a wedding to go for.
A wedding? My goodness. I don't think I've been to a wedding in like 2.5 years.
I have been to a few, actually, during this pandemic. But they're all very smallish.
Small events.
Yes.
Everyone wearing masks, even the bride.
So. I hope they would test all of the guests before they enter all of us into the venue.
Well, they should. I mean, this is the new normal, right? We all have to learn to adjust to living with COVID-19 as we transition to the endemic phase. Weddings is probably, I think, you know, I don't know whether there's been a pent up of weddings.
I heard there is.
There is, right?
Yes.
Because a lot of people put it off.
That's right. And I think some of them couldn't wait. So they just skip the wedding. You register and get on with the baby.
Okay. It helps because Malaysia has a declining birth rate, by the way. But as usual, we have a rather jam-packed day. What do we have at 7? Well, at 7:15, we're going to be talking to someone that's very involved in the F&B and nightclub scene. His name is Jeremy Lim. He's going to tell us why he's a little bit sad, I suppose, with the fact that nightclubs still remain on the ban list. What's happening at 7:30 a.m.?
7:30 a.m. we'll be talking about South Korea, not the K-pop, but actually the president. They have a new president, which is Yoon Suk-yeol. I hope I get his name right all the time. I always wonder. We will be talking to Jonathan Berkshire Miller to see what is this new president going to bring to the country.
Okay. And then at 7:45, we're going to continue our coverage of the Johor state elections. But today in particular, we're going to focus on the smaller political parties, which normally no one gives attention to. And I think it's a nice way to round up our coverage. So first off, at 7:45, we'll be talking to Party Socialist Malaysia. And then at 8:45, with Party Bangsa Malaysia. So stay tuned. It's going to be an interesting show. We'll be discussing all of that and more. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Rosanna by Toto, the legendary band. And one of my favourite songs from them is Africa, which has really cool beats, but nonetheless, also a lovely song. 6:08, Friday, the 11th of March. And I think the next story that you picked, right, Chen Li?
That's right.
Is super timely because come 1st of April, borders reopen. And for many of us who haven't left the country, we might finally do so, right? There's a sense that as we transition to endemic phase and, you know, travel, overseas travel becomes something possible within sight, doesn't become so cumbersome, you're not so fearful, you know, you've been double vaxxed, you've been boosted, you're ready. But there's a new trend, right, emerging, and we see this from this BBC article entitled Workcations, the travel trend mixing work and play. Help us situate the story, Chen Li.
So, workcation is the new word that came up during pandemic. What it means is actually combining work and vacation instead of just going for a vacation.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I think I was reading through the article and I kind of think that this may be a younger people kind of thing.
I think it's not younger people. I think it's what kind of job you do.
That's true.
Privileged kind of job you do. It's not possible for everybody.
Not for us, for sure.
I think rather challenging because we need to be in the studio. And even if we did shows remotely, there is a sound quality. Maybe if you're like a reporter, possible. But it's not for everybody, right?
That's right. And but I always tend to, when I'm on vacation, I try not to think about work. So when I was looking through this definition or this new way of traveling, which is basically you work in the day, you just do your usual work, and then maybe at the end of the day, you go and travel and do the usual travel stuff. I'm not sure if you can really turn off your mind. Like, you know, at the end of the day, can you still like, plan and go to that restaurant or visit that museum? If you have a certain working hour restriction, how are you going to do all the spots, tourist spot visiting? What if they're closed?
On the weekends, I think you can fit it in because the data actually, surprisingly, according to this BBC article, a whopping 85% of 3,000 Indian workers said in a poll that they took a vacation. A quarter of Canadian workers say they want to take one this year. And in a global study of 8 countries, 65% of 5,500 respondents say they plan to extend a work trip into a leisure one, or vice versa. So it doesn't look like this trend is going to go away. It looks like
it's going to stay.
It's going to stay, right?
It's the new way to travel for a lot of the people. But don't be mistaken. If you're taking a workation, doesn't mean that you still won't be doing a vacation. So this is actually more like you're still working, mm-hmm. but you're working in a different place. And that's it. It's not really a vacation. So people still need to take the vacation, the usual vacation, so that they don't get burnt out.
So is it the case of, so you take your notebook with you, your laptop with you, and then you work remotely. And then during your free time, you do all the leisure activities and maybe you extend that holiday, right?
Yep.
So that is really the definition of a workation?
Correct. And also say, for example, if you were to travel for work, mm-hmm. Maybe on Monday to Friday or somewhere for work, and then on the Saturday or Sunday or the weekend, you extend your stay a little bit over there and then you just do your usual stuff. I think they call it leisure or something like that. Yeah.
Haven't we been doing this even prior to COVID? I don't know. Yeah. Did you used to take business trips?
Not so much for my line of work last time. No. So
okay, I'm guilty as charged. I was sent here and there, and and it was like a variety of places. So I've been to Middle East. I've been to London, of course, Hong Kong, Singapore, Jakarta, Bangkok, and there is always an element of leisure, even though it's a extremely jam-packed business trip. It could be just a simple dinner in a nice restaurant that you want to go to. Sometimes it could be just a few hours before you catch your flight, or sometimes you do extend your week. You know, if you, let's say it's a Monday to Friday, and then you extend it a little bit to Saturday and Sunday and you come back later. So it's not new, but I guess maybe it's practiced more widely and maybe less companies think it's you shouldn't do this kind of thing. It's become more acceptable.
It depends on company culture. But I think for this one, when it comes to workation, I think the people actually go to a different place and still...
But you brought up an earlier point, which is good. Do you think this is a good practice because it allows you to completely recharge? Or then do you get confused as to whether you're working or on holiday? So I guess it depends what kind of person you are. Do you know how to stop work completely on a workation so you enjoy the leisure part? Or are you a bit like me, always buzzing? Let us know what you think. You can tweet in. Our handle is at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We'll be back in a few minutes after some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was The Air That I Breathe by The Hollies, 6:18, Friday, the 11th of March, and you're listening to The Morning Run. I really like the beat of that song, actually. Kind of ushers this nicely into the weekend. But I don't know, do you find when you come back on Monday, you're like, what did I do over the weekend? Where did time go?
All the time.
So this article is somewhat related to my comment. Chen Li, what is it all about?
The title is called We Will Forget Much of the Pandemic, and that's a good thing. So,
and it's from the New York Times,
it's
right?
It's from the New York Times by Dr. Small, who's actually a neuroscientist. Mm-hmm. So he was saying, as we move towards the post-pandemic future, it is vital that we remember the lessons learned from the pandemic, but it's also inevitable that many of our memories will fade over time. And he thinks that forgetting is not only normal, but is in fact necessary for our mental health. Because he's the frontliner, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he says that forgetting protects us from debilitating anxiety, not by deleting memories, but by quieting the emotional scream.
Okay.
So I guess from a frontliner perspective, they see a lot more dramatic.
The negative consequences
correct.
Of COVID-19, right, where people really unfortunately lost their lives, as many as 3 million people. I think we shouldn't forget that. So I think he, in this article, what I picked up is that I never thought about it. What happens if you don't forget? Mm. What happens if you are trapped in time and you can't let go of the memories and what you feel is so raw, is as if you were still there and you relive that feeling again and again and again daily. For sure, it will have a mental health impact on you. And this is actually PTSD. It's like when soldiers go to war, right?
Mm.
They never forget. So they feel like they're still fighting it and people are dying around them and there's, you know, military activity is going on. And that's when you can't forget. And it's a good thing that actually our memories slowly fade away.
and move on with life. That's what he's trying to say. But if I were to dig back on my pandemic memories, I was lucky enough to not have a lot of death around me, but although there are some. But I mean, on a lighter note, I remember the empty streets, the closed shops, a lot of woos from the business owners. I'm sure for them, it's definitely something not forgettable if they were to look back at their financials. And if you look at the death and all that, a lot of people are left without some family members.
Mm.
And of course, this is something that they have to move on. And although I know it's not easy, but it's just with us. And a lot of things we just have to move on and with the start of the life.
How do we then move on, right? I mean, how do we best approach what is the sad reality of COVID-19 without learning our lessons that we should have learned as a society, whether it's government, society, individuals? Because it was such an event of such consequence where basically the whole world, unfortunately, had to share this painful and bad experience. So what we did see was, you know, like you say, from an economic perspective, people did suffer hardship. From a health perspective, unfortunately, some people got COVID, suffered a long COVID. Some people, in fact, died.
Yes.
You know, and then people sacrificed their lives for COVID-19, as you're talking about, the frontliners, right? Those who had to continue to work. And it wasn't just healthcare workers, right? In England, it included people who ran the tube, for example, supermarket people who had to stack the shelves. And this is in the super early days of COVID-19.
The delivery workers.
Yeah, the delivery workers. And even, okay, so I bring this story back to myself. Never in a million years did I think that a supermarket run to buy a dozen eggs, a carton of milk and some vegetables would involve making a decision whether it would be worth it, because I don't know whether I would catch COVID-19. Of course, this is in the early phases. And now, of course, with booster jabs, vaccinations, life is somewhat better. Mm. I don't feel the stress so much. But I still have those raw memories. And I'm wondering, maybe it's good so that I always will comply with the SOPs. But how do you let go of this so that you can start reliving a little bit and you're not trapped by your fears?
Yes, that's right. And I was also thinking about the good memories that came with it. I mean, look at what our frontliners have done. They have done a great job rolling out the vaccination and also treating the patients and all that. And how can we, you know, remember this good thing, this good lesson?
Yeah, that society can come together, right? The hashtag Kita Jaga Kita became so true in Malaysia. I think we should also hang on to some of the good things, which is the realization that family is important, right? Friends are important, that we are social creatures. And that we are still very innovative. We came up with new ways to communicate. Technology actually helped us to stay in touch. We still managed to work despite all the crisis. So in the mix of it all, hang on to the good memories, gently let go of the bad ones, but let there always be lessons that we can learn. But up next, we have the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And to take us there, I guess, is a funky song, which is Fell in Love with a Boy by Joss Roland. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that is by the ever cool Sade Paradise. Lovely tune on a Friday morning at 6:39, 11th of March. And as usual, at this time of the morning, we look at all the international headlines, be it the portals or the newspapers that we think are rather interesting. What's on your docket, Chen Li?
The big headlines, which is U.S. inflation has hit fresh 40-year high of 7.9%. Last month, it was 7.5%. So now it's 7.9% increasing
again. Well, it's not surprising because this morning, Brent crude is down a little bit, though. It's $109, but it wasn't like this a month ago.
Exactly.
And added to that, grain prices, metal prices, all-time high. So 7.9%, I'm not surprised. I wonder what the number will look like next month.
That's also my question, because they have quoted this rise is actually because of gasoline, food and housing costs. But don't forget, the Ukraine war just started at the end of February. So we will see the effects in March, maybe April, hopefully no. But, you know, hopefully the war will end earlier than that.
Well, unfortunately, the war doesn't look like it's ending anytime soon because the talks have somewhat failed. So I think it's stalemate at the moment. In fact, the conflict seems like getting more and more, I suppose, challenge, you know, it's difficult times, right? 1 million children have already evacuated Ukraine. The scenes of the carnage, there was a maternity hospital that got bombed yesterday. It doesn't look like it's going to go away, unfortunately.
That's right. So, you know, because of that, ECB side also have some changes in Christine Lagarde. She actually signaled more focus on high inflation than slowing economic growth. So she's going to phase out the bond buying program by September or even sooner. Mm. And she's trying to pave the way for interest rate, potential interest rate hike for
ECB
area.
Is she managing expectations? I think she is more than anything else, right?
I hope so. But I guess in a way, yes, because a lot of people have been urging for them to do something about it. And she's finally leaking some words and hinting that, yes, we may be doing it.
You know? I think central bankers are all in this mode of managing expectations.
That's right.
So on March 17, FOMC also meets. This is the US Fed, of course. And likely that they, I think, still are going to hike rates by 25 bips as opposed to 50 bips because the market seems to be a bit too jittery. And even IMF have cut down their GDP for global GDP. So markets maybe not prepared to accept 50 bips at the moment. But talking about Russia and the Ukraine crisis, we see more names actually departing from Russia. Mm-hmm. So banks are now doing it. Goldman Sachs was the first, followed by JP Morgan. Now, JP Morgan is the biggest US bank. So they are currently engaging in limited activities in the country. The biggest US bank that's involved in Russia is Citigroup, right? But at the moment, nothing. No news from them as to whether they intend to depart.
From what I understand, Goldman Sachs business in Russia is actually not very big. So
same with JP Morgan is small.
So they can afford to make that pull. Citibank, I think, may be much bigger than that. So they may have to weigh in a bit more before they make that announcement or if they were to do anything at all. But also on the same thing on companies, that's brands that's actually leaving Russia. A few days ago, I was talking about Uniqlo, who said that they will be staying because clothing is a necessity. They have actually U-turned on that and say that they are temporarily suspending their operation over there. So a bit of a change.
Okay, so they're taking a little bit of a step back. Maybe the public pressure was so great that they had to and the backlash wasn't good. Now, this is a somewhat Malaysia-Singapore story, but I will put it in the international headlines. And that is Malaysia, we are going to raise the daily passenger quota by nearly 60% for the land BTL with Singapore starting from March 14.
And since you're talking about Singapore, then I also want to talk about Singapore because they are calling for expats with super skills.
Yeah, I saw that. What do they mean by super skills? Do we qualify, Chen Li?
I hope so. But so what they're saying, they have a new point-based visa system. So they're trying to boost local employment and they're trying to attract all these high talent, super skilled talent to come to their country to fill up the gaps, I suppose.
Well, if you think about it, this is the perfect time to come out with a very clear policy, right? Because we know expats are leaving Hong Kong in droves, right? The zero COVID strategy is very painful if you're an expat. Coming in and coming out of the country, you have to spend 21 days in quarantine. It's no joke. And at the moment, I think Hong Kong is really facing the peak of the COVID-19 crisis.
Mm.
So far, what? 3,000 people have died. They have one of the highest death rates. You see images of supermarket shelves being empty. In hospitals, people are waiting in the car parks, in their beds. So it doesn't look good. So when expats want to leave, but they don't want to leave Asia, Singapore looks like the next best thing, right? And we always know there's this bit friendly rivalry between Singapore and Hong Kong.
To be the international hub.
Yeah, to be the next Asian financial hub. So it makes sense. So if I'm Singapore, yeah, I want talent, but I want the right talent. I don't want just any talent, right? Because you want those high productivity, super skill, well-paying jobs. But we're going to take a break. And to take us to that is Talking in Your Sleep by The Romantics. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Talking in Your Sleep by The Romantics. Hopefully not too many secrets come out at night. It is 6:50, Friday the 11th of March. And at this time, we always look at what's in the local newspapers and also the portals that have caught our eye. What has attracted your attention, Chen Li?
Front page of the Malaysian Reserve, air travel recovery to be weak on higher fare cost. Oh dear. Mm. So our Mohsin Aziz actually said that...
he's an analyst, by the way.
He's an analyst at Pangolin Investment Management. He said that severe skilled staff shortages are expected in the industry because that's a lot of retrenchment that happened last year, right? AirAsia actually cut 10% of the staff. Malaysia Airlines actually gave a voluntary unpaid leave to all the 13,000 employees. And then the recovery will remain, he thinks that will remain fragile and could take 6 to 18 months to get back to pre-pandemic levels. So although, yes, a lot of us are eager to travel, don't forget, fare is going to be a bit expensive.
Yeah, I also noticed the airlines have started to implement a fuel surcharge.
AirAsia.
Yes, AirAsia, I think Malaysian Airlines is also following suit because oil is, of course, $110 a barrel. So that translates definitely to jet fuel costs also. I think it's also fares are high because there aren't that the routes, I mean, as in the schedules haven't reverted back to pre-pandemic levels,
supply
right?
shortage.
Yeah, so maybe last time, you know, there were like 5 flights a day to Melbourne, for example, by different airlines. And maybe now that's still 3 or 4. So, of course, you know, fares aren't going to be competitive at this juncture, right? Okay, so I'm going to talk about the sad news that is on Malaysian Insight. And that is in Ampang yesterday, there was a landslide and 2 people have unfortunately lost their lives. So I think, you know, why is this still happening in this day and age? And it's a story we keep talking about, right? Landslides. What are we doing to the environment? Are we building houses in the right area in the first place? Could the local councils do more in terms of keeping check in terms of the soil conditions if you're living next to a hill? And it's still rainy season, right? So I think this is something, you know, why sadly we are still confronted with this news when we open our newspapers. Is it an unnecessary loss of life?
That's very sad indeed. Well, I have another kind of potentially sadder news.
Okay, even though it's Friday, bring it on.
Which is related to oil subsidy.
Okay.
So Tengku Zafrul actually came up to say that they have been subsidizing, because of the rise in the oil price, they have been subsidizing up to $2.5 billion per month for our oil, for our petrols, actually.
Yes, because RON 95 is fixed, right? At 2 ringgit and 5 cents.
So what they actually, we have been paying is 2 ringgit and 5 cents for RON 95. But the actual cost in March has actually reached 3 ringgit and 70 cents per litre. So the government is actually subsidizing 1 ringgit and 65 cents per litre, which is 45% of the actual cost that we have been seeing out there. And on top of that, cooking oil subsidy is also something that they're looking at. Because in 2020, it was 500 million, but it has increased fourfold to 2 billion in 2021. So it looks like a lot of price increases that might come around, we don't know.
I think we need to look at all these subsidies in a holistic manner, right? It's related somewhat to our taxation system, so it's incomplete. So what happens is that the government revenues aren't enough to fund all our fiscal activities, and even our, what do you call, emoluments pay is extremely high. So our fixed cost as a government is already very high, leaving us very little money to do any expansionary government activity. If we want to resolve this from a longer-term perspective and actually look at the structural issues, this also includes rehauling our taxation system and widening the tax base because too few people pay tax. So I hope when the government does this, if you ask me at one time, consider your fuel subsidies, consider your taxation system, maybe even bring in GST. I know it's super unpopular, but we need it.
Yeah,
you know, and COVID-19 has highlighted that when we need the money to spend, sometimes that actually prevents us from helping the economy recover, put in the healthcare system that, you know, Malaysians desperately need.
Yeah, but also because oil prices are so volatile right now, I'm not sure how you can look at this and price it accordingly. Because right now, maybe they revise it to a certain level and then something happened in the world and...
You need to then have a floating mechanism.
That's right.
So it cannot be a fixed subsidy. It has to be floating that, you know, maybe the government decides, okay, I want to subsidize a certain amount, but as a government, you know what the value is capped. Currently, what it is that there's no cap.
It's a fixed amount.
It keeps just going up and up every time fuel prices go up, you know, and then you're stuck. Also, the question is, why should someone who drives a Mercedes SL500, whatever the latest car is, pay the same fuel price as a person who's maybe driving a motorbike and earning 2,000 or even the minimum wage? To me, that always doesn't make sense. Now, for me, what has caught my eye is the New Straits Times, page 5. It's Parliament News. And DAP, Anthony Look, has suggested that an MOU 2.0 be considered. And he says that all the problems brought about by COVID-19 pandemic should be resolved, and that he's recommending a delay of the dissolution of parliament. Sounds like he's expecting GE15 soon, and he doesn't really want that. Yeah, that's my takeaway.
This is something that we have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, interesting stuff, I have to say. But do tune in anyway. Politics is going to be super interesting because we're going to unpack the results of the Johor state elections on Monday. And also, of course, we are continuing our coverage today. But we're going to have a discussion at 8 a.m. on Monday with Dr. Azmin Hassan, who's a senior researcher at the Nusantara Academy for Strategic Research, and Dr. O.E. Sun, senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. We're going to break down the Johor elections line by line as to who the winners and losers are and what the repercussions. But that's all the local news headlines for you. Up next, we have the 7 a.m. news bulletin. And to take us there, is a change is going to come. I'm not sure whether that's the case for Johor elections. By Sam Cook. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.